Good morning, everybody. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm J.D. Bunkus, Ehlers Forfar, Blake Murphy. Blake Murphy, weirdly, the supposed nerd of the show, the only one not wearing glasses today. Tough look for the show's dynamic. I don't really know what to do. I'm a little thrown off.
Get that laser eye.
Did you get it?
Yeah, I got it a long time ago.
I'm a bit of a chicken for that. I actually do think that having glasses is a nice switch-up look for your face once in a while, and wearing fake glasses, I don't think I could ever do it. That would make me feel I'm not Austin Matthews. I'm not Russell Westbrook out here. You know,
you're not a certain Toronto sports head coach. Yeah. I understand.
Whoa, okay.
Whoa, that was an unmasking.
Look, we're going to be spicy all morning, so.
Yeah, that was, wow.
But I don't understand why you're uncomfortable with a literal laser beam removing tissue from your eye. What could be uncomfortable about that?
Yeah, I've heard that you have to, like, sit still. That they go, you can't move, you got to stare forward, The anxiety of that moment alone is enough for me.
What if you have to sneeze?
Yeah, well, then if you sneeze, you die. That's what happens.
Oh, my God,
right,
I will never, ever.
And it blows it up, and that's it for you.
You also, like, some people report here smelling a smell as well. Like, smell the, like, kind of, like, a burning hair smell.
No.
Yeah. I did, but I also, like, I don't know. This was, like, a long time ago now, like, maybe 10 years ago. I don't know if I actually smelt it or, like, I just, like psychologically was just, like, oh, no, I'm burning my eyes.
I'll tell you what. As always, I'm for sale, basically. So if there's a LASIK company that wants to sponsor me to do this, I'll do it.
This is why I'm saying non-brand specific laser eye. Yeah. For all you know, I got the knockoff bootleg laser eye until someone's willing to slap the old label on there.
Okay, but let's restart the show. I hate this.
Well, if I ever get it, I'm going to wear those swimmer nose plug. You know, I'm not taking the risk. I'm showing up. They're like, what? They're like, what are you doing?
I'm sorry. I even thought this was for laser eye.
That'll be me getting ready to get that laser shot into my eye. So... Controversy all around. Controversy. A $10 million player, I know he's 8.5, went to a podium yesterday, was upset, got called out for being upset, and now guess what? Everybody else is upset. Boy, you gotta love stories like this because the internet just absolutely pops off. So, for those of you that are living under a rock, we'll play you the audio. Yesterday, Leon Draisaitl, he of the Edmonton Oilers that have won, I don't even know how many games in the last, here's what they've won. Like, basically no games in 2 months. Between shutdowns and their team, the Oilers are just in a full-blown, ugly tailspin. And this is a team that's not unfamiliar to this. They've had some other run-ins with the media before. They've had stuff like this. In fact, this player specifically, last year, those of you that like this hockey team in this city, the Toronto Maple Leafs, will recall Leon Draisaitl getting mad at media members after he was asked about losing 3 straight to the Leafs. But yesterday, this is Leon Draisaitl and Hockey Hall of Fame journalist Jim Matheson addressing the team's... The team's funk, the state of the team right now. Roll the clip, Vic.
Lots of reasons for why the Oilers are playing the way they are in terms of winning and losing. What do you think is the number one reason for the losses now? Is there one thing that you, in your own mind, you're saying we got to get better at that?
Yeah, we have to get better at everything.
Would you like to expand on that?
No. You can do that. You know everything.
Why are you so pissy, Leon? Why are you so pissy?
I'm not. I'm just answering your
question. Yeah, you are. Whenever I ask you a question.
I gave you an answer.
Not very good one.
Okay.
I have one more for you. Leon, you show your frustration on the ice last game against Ottawa. Is that a good thing when you show it so the other team knows you're frustrated?
Yeah, it's a great thing, for sure.
Okay. So I let me just start with this. That the reaction that the three of us had, I think that's the real reaction for most people, is just sort of laughing this off, that this is not really the biggest of deal for either side. And I want to kind of go into this with that mentality, because we're all inside and we're all stuck in, we're all on our screens, we're on our phones. And I really do hate this part of the pandemic and the part of all these lockdowns and shutdowns and whatever the hells, is that there's not enough actual human interaction on stories like this. We're lucky. We really are. We're lucky that we get to have a chat about this, whereas the average person just looks at the clip, they go to comment, and they're just mad. And you look at – and that, I just think that's very reflective in the comment section of how – dire these situations become all of a sudden, and you step out of it and you go, actually, at the core of this, it's just like some funny words between two rich guys, or two guys making good money at least. I won't say Jim's rich, but he's not poor, I would guess, given that he's a Hockey Hall of Fame writer. He's probably had a pretty comfortable career. Two guys having a bad day who probably don't like each other and have a weird exchange over something that ultimately doesn't matter. So yes, a chuckle, ha ha ha, ha ha ha. I do think that is that's the core of this. But moving beyond it, I do think that there is, we do have a good group for talking about the story. Blake, you have been to a million podiums. Ailish, you are a former pro athlete, and me, well, I'll just say all the dumb things, so you got that covered. So, but Blake, I'm going to start with you on this one, just because, again, you do have so much experience as a reporter, and there is a journalism thing, because it seems that, to me anyways, one of the things, I shouldn't say I was surprised, but a lot of people were very upset with this, and the word pissy, and the conduct of Matheson, really just, I shouldn't be surprised, but I was a little. Just the way that the public interpreted this story and felt the need to really come to the defense of Leon Draisaitl. So just like from your standpoint of the professionalism of this exchange, or how this happened, or what you're taught, or what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, so first of all, I covered Kyle Lowry in Toronto for a long time. Like, I'm not unfamiliar with guys. Well, in Kyle's case, it was more he's having a good day and decides to be a smartass than having a bad day and taking it.
I always like when Grange would get completely destroyed by Lowry, like on something mundane. Like, he'd be like, how'd you shoot? None of your business. I'd be like, okay.
Yeah. Or Kyle enters the press room. He's like, don't ask me anything stupid today, Grange. Yeah. Like, but there's an element of, like, Kyle Lowry had that kind of relationship with reporters, right? And obviously Leon Draisaitl doesn't have that. The Edmonton media, you know, historically does not have a great reputation with players. They've tended to be a very management friendly media collection. The other thing here, and it's not the spiciest of answers, is Draisaitl answered a question fully before this clip starts. Like, he gave a full answer. And then Matheson's follow-ups were like, it puts Draisaitl in a tough spot where he didn't have to be that short, but like, what is he supposed to say? Like, Matheson wanted him to throw his goalies under the bus. That's what he was setting him up for. It's like, what's the problem with this team? It's like, everyone outside the organization has diagnosed it. Your coach got a lot of bad press for throwing the goalies under the bus recently too. So I think it's a bit of a no win for Draisaitl, and obviously he had just like had enough. From Matheson's perspective, like, you ask the question, you ask the follow up, and you can dislike it. You cannot, you know, you cannot be thrilled with it. The cutting him off and calling him pissy is very immature, and I'm sure, like, in Matheson's column today, there's going to be remarks about Draisaitl being immature. It's like, bro, man, you're in your 70s. Like, you could grow up on this side too. But I think it's a lot made of an exchange that, look, man, this team's bad. Everyone's frustrated. The people covering it are probably frustrated for covering a bad team yet again. Draisaitl and the Oilers are obviously frustrated. And yeah, Matheson took his shot digging in a little bit more on a topic that Draisaitl just wasn't willing to give him an answer on. So I think if you're Matheson, if you're in that spot as a reporter, you know, that's a calculated risk you take to stand up and be that blunt with a player and call them out like that. You have to accept that what the energy you're getting back from that could go a certain way, and that's the way it went. So I don't have a huge issue with Matheson's line of questioning beyond saying the word pissy, which is just like you kind of undercut, hey, you're being immature by being immature yourself. But I also don't really like, if that's how Draisaitl wants to respond, that's fine, man. That's the risk you take going down a contentious line of questioning.
Ailis, did you like his answer? Like, what did you think? Because I think the first part, Blake, for the most part, I really like your answer. I guess the first part where you say Leon answered the question, I don't mind him following it up, but you're right. He blew it when he used the word pissy. That's when it becomes two guys where it's so funny to sound that pissy and be calling someone pissy. it's like when you're in a fight with someone and you do get so mad at them that you lose focus on the fact that you have it. Like, you're there. You are in the right. And then you let your emotion take over, and now all of a sudden the other person has the upper hand and you're in the wrong. There's nothing more relatable to me than that. So I totally got it. But yeah, what did you make of Leon's response, Ailis? Like, did you think it was a line crosser? Where are you at with it?
Yeah, I feel like I went through kind of a few stages after watching this. First of all, it's extremely viral online. It's almost got 2 million views, and that shows you, you know, that's a regular press conference moment from the Edmonton Oilers. I think that shows you
non-hockey that non-hockey people saw it and watched
all over the world, it felt like.
Exactly.
So initially I saw it and I laughed. I just was like, my God, I can't believe he said that. And then I started to think about what it's like to be in that position as an athlete. And my perspective of it is, you're frustrated. And as we just talked about, you know what the answer is. It really felt like he was being baited to throw somebody under the bus. And you know that that's just going to add to the problems you have in the locker room with the team chemistry, et cetera. And I don't think it's on Leon Draisaitl to go out there and say, yeah, you know, actually, Jim, the problem is our goaltending sucks. Like, I don't see him doing that. And I also feel like that would just make more chaos in that locker room. So I saw what he did as kind of just like noble in a sense, like holding back what he really wanted to say. And I gave him a little bit of respect for that. I do think that I think the baiting issue was where I started to get a little bit frustrated, that it felt like he kept pushing and pushing Draisaitl to say something. And the only response I have to that is, I'd love to see that type of energy when you have your GM, the president, the owner at this podium. They're people you should be asking why in year 7 of a McDavid Draisaitl team, why you're not even a wild card position, like why you're struggling so much. Those are the people that you want to kind of push at the podium. I don't think you want to push your all-star players, because watch the next time that Jim asks a question, no one's going to give him the time of day. He's ruined his relationship with the Edmonton Oilers and how he's going to cover the team. Like, no players are going to be pumped to talk to him now. I think he just kind of wasted a bullet on that one.
Okay, so this is where I start to take the issue, I guess, in the way that this is received. One is that I didn't see it as baity as the two of you, I guess, because to me, Leon Draisaitl is one of the best people on the planet to ask that question to. Hey, what's going on with your team? Hey, is there one specific thing? Because what happens when you have a real problem? You start with the first thing that's correctable. You start with something. You have to start somewhere. When you have a big, overwhelming issue, and that's in your life or with a team or whatever, it's best to find an entry point, somewhere where you can take that first step. So I think that question is beyond reasonable. Number two is, Ken Holland wasn't in the room. They didn't have Dave Tippett up there. That's Leon Draisaitl. So the whole projection of, well, do that to the coach, do that to the GM, by all accounts from the Edmonton people, they're doing that when they get those opportunities. I don't know if they get that contentious the way that Jim did with the player, but I also don't think that they normally get that contentious with the players, right? Like, this is a one-off with that particular individual. So that is one where I go, okay, if you're going to call out all of Edmonton's media for not pushing the general manager or the head coach, well, then go through all their media conferences with the GM and the head coach. Because it just seems a little unfair to kind of just throw that as a component of it when it's just, now we're taking things from outside of this and strapping it on to a short little video exchange. And I think that's a little tough. That's a little unfair.
Well, I see where you're coming from, but it's also there's a track record here, right? Like you mentioned a couple times Matheson's Hockey Hall of Fame credentials. It's like, yeah, this guy's been writing about the team for 30 years. Like, there's a track record we're evaluating this from, too. It's not, you know, it wasn't some reporter's first day in the room, and we're judging from that. There's a baseline, and, you know, we know the person that we're talking about here.
Sure.
The same way it would be taken differently from Draisaitl than, you know, a fresh-faced rookie coming up and being put in that spot. As for the Holland thing, you know, Daniel Nugent-Bowman of The Athletic, like, gave it to Holland pretty good recently, and Holland basically, like, shut down the press conference. And
right.
So
they
it is
all
a little...
act pissy like that. Like, everybody, when they're faced with this in those spots, ends up getting pissy. So, sorry, I didn't mean to just, cut you off. I just look at this as a spot where when you have contentious team scenarios now, it really does feel like you're in a really tough spot as a media member, because you try to ask these questions. You also have a job to do, but it's impossible to really cover a team properly, because what are you supposed to do? If you spin things positively, you get looked at as a shill, right? You get looked as someone who's carrying water for one of these organizations, for that front office, whatever. You get lumped in with the history of the Edmonton Oilers, which has always had a boys club vibe, right? It's like everybody around the Oilers has been around the Oilers from the 80s and Cats and blah, 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 blah. But if you press someone, you kind of have to be willing to get your hands dirty a bit. You kind of have to be willing to take a little bit of smoke from somebody. And maybe that's where, again, Jim went wrong, is that he got pissy when Leon was pissy. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know what you're supposed to do there. And to me, it was just – it's refreshing in this media climate where, to me, a lot of media members who are given that time of day at the podiums are terrified of any type of social media backlash or any type of – you weren't team friendly, you weren't positive, or you're trying to drive a player out of town. Like, those things get more concerning to fans online a lot of times than the team's performance. And so I will admit that part of me is defending this guy, because it was viewed as to me anyways, refreshing that someone actually had a backbone, actually had a spine to go after a player like that, who is responsible for this team's play and who is one of the leaders of this team.
Yeah, so I think there are a couple points that this could have gone differently, right? And I don't know Jim Matheson that well. Personally, I've only met him a couple times a couple years ago.
I don't know him at all.
But if I were in this situation, this is kind of how I would have gone through it. You ask the original question, he gives you the longer answer of like, yeah, of course we're angry. This is really frustrating to be back here. You ask one follow-up, and you don't get the answer you want. So you ask that other follow-up, which is where the viral clip starts. And that's a reasonable question at that point. And Draisaitl basically gives you a no answer. So you have a couple options there. You can dig in further after he's given you two basically non-answers in a row. And you are accepting what Matheson accepted there, that you're going down a path that's going to be a little more contentious. You also have the option to veer off there, kind of take the loss. And then the framing of your column can become... I mean, look, this is something where it falls on the player too, of like, if you don't provide that context and that answer, you are leaving it in the hands of Jim Matheson to do it. Mm-hmm. And if you are Draisaitl and you apparently don't like Jim Matheson's explanations of things, you've just given him free rein of write whatever you want. So you can pivot off at that point. And then as it gets more contentious, every one of those exchanges, you have a chance to pivot off, right? Like, that suddenly at that point, then Draisaitl's frustration and unwillingness to name the problems becomes a story point of his own, and you can pivot off there. And then, so there were just like, there were a couple exit ramps for Matheson before it got to the end that it did, where, you know, now the exchange is the story. Whereas I actually think if you're a reporter and you have a player that visibly frustrated with the outside criticism, that unwilling to name what the issue, like, that's an interesting story, and that's an interesting approach to a column. And it just, like, you had a couple times to peel off and you just kept digging in. And then at this point, it's like there's nothing to the story other than Draisaitl and Matheson exchanging it. And again, I do think there's a little bit of, if we're giving Draisaitl the benefit of the doubt, he didn't want to be like, well, have you seen Mikko Koskinen play goalie? But yeah, so I think, you know, no one comes out of this looking great. I also think no one comes out of it, like, it's not that big a deal. It's not that bad. It just, like, it was so avoidable on both sides at several turnoffs here.
I think both things can be true. Like, I can see all of your points about Jim Matheson trying to actually, like, create a story and to press a superstar in the podium, which most people don't. And that was a good point, JD, that a lot of times I feel like they sugarcoat their questioning just to keep a good relationship and they don't want to push buttons. And I totally understand that. And then on the other side, I can feel for Leon Draisaitl, who's extremely frustrated and is like, hey, buddy, like, I literally have nothing else to say. Like, what do you want? And I think that the main issue comes down to is I feel like Jim Matheson got a little bit upset and it took it personally. And that's where he pushed, he stepped over the line, so to speak, of professionalism and a little bit more of like, hey, I'm going to get this answer from you because yeah. I'm a little bit upset that you treated me this way. I think that is the main thing that veered off of it just being a regular press conference to being this viral press conference. And I will say a disclaimer, I don't watch any of these press conferences with the GM, with the owner and stuff. So you're completely right. They could be asking these same questions. They could be holding them accountable. I don't know that because I don't watch any Edmonton Oilers press conferences. So that's something that, I mean, is a good disclaimer to kind of put out there because they could totally be doing that. I only saw this clip because it was viral and because everybody had something to say about it, which just, I think right now, anything in Edmonton is also really like angsty. Like everybody's sure. holding this feeling. And as soon as there's something, it's like, let's blow it up. Like, oh my God. Like just with the McDavid and Kane comments, like he really didn't say too much, but it became this entire narrative that Kane, that he supports Evander Kane and he doesn't care about his track record and he wants him on the team. It's like, I don't think he really said that. He yeah. just said like, I don't really care. Like, you know, if he's a good player, he's a good player. So I think that it's a bad spot to be in if you're from Edmonton, you play for the Oilers, or you cover the Oilers right now. It is toxic.
Yeah, it sucks. And that is a huge part of this, right? Is, again, the context of what it is. I do find it funny that so many Oilers fans do the, it's another media member chasing a guy out of town. You go, if that's what chases Leon Draisaitl out of town, then you were screwed anyways, right? If an exchange with a reporter or a media group pressing somebody on a struggling team is what cost you Leon Draisaitl, well, you know, that's probably just about the worst take you can have. I also think, yeah, these are the same fans, or a lot of them anyways, that were furious with Connor McDavid's response a few days ago and saying mm-hmm. that he lacked leadership and he lacked accountability and he was showing old school hockey culture and all this other BS off the answer, taking too much. I will say this. That is what you just said about pressing with Jim and Blake, the off-ramps. That's the part of this where I find it kind of, I don't like using the word indefensible because it makes it sound like I'm actually offended. When in reality, yes, I think we've all come to the same place, which is, this is fun. And no, media is not supposed to be the story. You're not really supposed to know who mm-hmm. Jim Matheson is unless you read his columns. You're not supposed to learn about who he is at a media conference, right? Like, that's not the intended goal of these things. But that ultimately, there's just, it felt a little bit throwback, you know, where a reporter and a player get into it a little bit, and then at the end of the day, it's really not a big deal. And normally, these two guys, you would hope, would have a face-to-face because they're in the dressing room with one another, right? The PR guy right. does bring them aside. They decide to both be the bigger men and bury the hatchet and talk it out like normal people. But instead, we have all the COVID protocol stuff. He's definitely not mm-hmm. going in that dressing room. They don't get a face-to-face. It becomes worse, blah, 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 blah. They don't get to be human with one another. But yes, when I first watched the clip, I thought, wow, Leon is the first guy to really escalate this because he makes it personal with the whole you have all the answers thing, right? Like,
yeah, that was like, uncalled what? For.
Yeah, it was. But Jim's tone on the follow-up is one of such entitlement. Not to exactly. break this down to every microfiber of it, but it is. The first shot, I think, is thrown by Jim. Goes, you care to elaborate on that? Like, he doesn't owe you that, right? You asked the mm-hmm. question, he gave you a crappy answer, but also welcome to professional sports coverage mm-hmm. where, Blake, how many times have you gotten an answer from an athlete in one of those scenarios where you've gone, wow, I'm thrilled with this response, not Masai Ujiri related, because I feel like every time Masai takes a podium, he starts it off with like, I don't know why I'm here, or you're not going to get anything from me, and then it turns into 30 minutes of like, posts that we should be basically putting on statues around Toronto to build Toronto up, you know? But outside of Masai, you're not getting a lot of gold there. And so, yes, Jim's initial, yeah, want to elaborate on that as though, you know, he was talking to his kid, mm-hmm. I thought was pretty crummy.
Yeah, it was, I mean, and again, that's what I said earlier is like, I almost guarantee Jim's column today will call Draisaitl immature. It's like, well, you're a grown man.
I hope he has a little self-reflection. I hope he does.
I don't
think he will. Did you see the tweet that he put out afterwards?
Yeah.
he got the most ratioed that I've ever seen in my entire Twitter career. Over a thousand responses, and it was a quote tweet to somebody that said, "Why is Leon Draisaitl so pissy? Maybe it's the fact that he's in his eighth year in the NHL and he's played 21 playoff games. Maybe it's the fact that the Oilers' last two playoff appearances have resulted in embarrassing sweeps." And then Jim quote tweets that saying, "This is why he was asked if there was some anger to go with that frustration." And then he gets blown up on Twitter.
Yeah, but this is also why I guess I find myself naturally defending a media member. And I'm, again, I'm showing some bias here, but there's a couple things. One is I hate the internet pylon when something is deemed this is an acceptable thing to go after or a person to go after. So just pile on, dog pile to any extent you want. And that is one of those, right? This is just one of those where it's very easy to dunk on the reporter instead of the player. But ultimately, if you're a sports fan, it's like, hey, this guy is technically trying to represent your interests, right? He's trying to find out an answer that you would want to know as a fan. And I'm sorry, fans are more plugged in than ever before, and media coverage in a lot of ways doesn't matter as much, or there isn't that same level of, hey, you've got to bring the story back here, because there are so many different outlets, so many different ways of access points, blah, 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 blah. But I always find it strange that, yeah, people cannibalize their own media sometimes instead of the player, and they go, you're doing bad and you're bad and we're going to dunk on you, when ultimately I would like to believe anyways that at the core of this, Jim is trying to do a job where a fan reads a column and feels like the Oilers are trying to progress moving somewhere forward, or that he's asking a player that matters, one of the core pieces of the Edmonton Oilers, how to get better, and he's being sloughed off. And part of this, again, is that element of it, where I go, this new media climate of players being able to control their own narratives, their own stories, it's great. It's great to have players' perspectives. I think it's awesome that they have Twitter accounts and podcasts that they'll go on with their friends and player podcasts. It's great to have more coverage. I don't view it as a problem whatsoever. But I do view it as a bit of an issue when we get so used to that type of coverage where it's like the team's interpretation of events, the Leafs all or nothing version of events versus the reality version of events. And that's all we're getting. And people sort of get very comfortable with that coverage and say, yep, I'm good with this. I'm good with just the way the team wants to present every single story. I'm good with the way that the player wants to present every single story. And anytime someone is difficult or wants to push it for the fans, sometimes fans go, why are you doing this? Why are you acting this way? It's like, he's doing it for you, dummies. Like, he's doing it for you. Maybe not this case, but I guess I'm lumping it in with other things.
So the only way to close this, obviously, is Leon has been called unprofessional by a few people. He needs to show up to the game tomorrow, and his pregame fit has to be Jean Renau's outfit from Leon the Professional with the little black cap and the round black glasses. Like, he has to do it, right?
I thought about...
Did you see, by the way, sort of cut you off, Greg Chikadze show up like that to the UFC on Saturday?
Yes, I did.
He was in the full Leon the Professional gear too. I'm like, so this is just a need to rewatch that movie is very front of mind right now.
Had I been good at Photoshop yesterday and been willing to take the social media heat, I would have created a graphic that was Leon the Unprofessional with the movie poster, and just taken all the heat and had it pop off. But I think that one crossed everybody's mind, though, too, right? That was one where you go, okay, everybody has this. Everybody's got that. Also, Leon the Professional, I did rewatch it during the pandemic. You kind of forget that the whole time he's, like, in love with, like, a 13-year-old girl. that there's a real undercurrent in that story of, hey, this guy lives down the hall from a 13-year-old girl, and they might be in love. There's a little bit untowardness. It's an awkward rewatch, I will say. When I was a kid, I saw it for the first time. It's a really strong movie, but yeah, very French. Like, there's some old school French to that sucker. Okay, so I think I want to take texts on this today too. 590-590. You can always leave DMs too if you want to elaborate on the story. At JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, and Blake Murphy on Instagram and Twitter. Keep them coming. Let us know what you think, what rubbed you the wrong way. But I also think that there's just a greater question too here, because listen, I liked it. I thought it was funny. I slough it off. But if you're a fan, that's not the best example I would use for a media member that was just doing their job and ended up getting pushed back with an athlete and was unfairly viewed. I think Jim deserves a lot of the criticism he's getting today. But I will say it does raise the question of how do you want your teams covered? You know, what do you want from reporters? Do you want them to push back? Do you want them to be harder? Do you really believe that media members chase guys out of town routinely? Like, do you believe in those things? Because we live in a place where that is very much the case. It wasn't too long ago where Mitch Marner was sitting at a podium and people were either blaming media members for chasing him out of town or calling him pissy, right? Like, this happens here too. So let me know. Let us know. I want to hear from everybody. Quickly, before we take the break, Jake Muzzin gets announced that he had a concussion. Or I don't know if it was actually necessarily deemed a concussion or if it was head injury. I should be more professional. I should diagnose this properly. I should have done my research.
Figure it out.
But he's not with the team the next game. Justin Hall is in COVID protocols. They've got our guy Alex Biega back with the team. All of a sudden, the second pairing is Liljegren and Sandin.
Hey, this is what I get. I wanted to see how they do against tougher minutes and less shelter
your fault.
Role. Yep.
You know what, though?
He does have a concussion, by the way.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And it's that play behind the net where he gets kind of crunched, and then I think they scored off of it. Anyway, continue.
Well, the positive spin zone for me here is clearly head trauma is bad, and no one wants Jake Muzzin to have a concussion. That's not great. But if I am looking at this from just a pure roster standpoint, I am saying to myself a little bit, hey, yeah, let's see Liljegren and Sandin having to play in all three zones and having to play 20 minutes a night. And my guess is Alex Biega is not the team's seventh defenseman or the eighth defenseman come playoff time, but let's see a little bit more from Dermott, where he has to sort of carry a partner, and maybe this added responsibility will spark something in a guy that we've been waiting for forever. I'm not buying these things necessarily. I think that the Sandin Liljegren thing is the far more interesting pairing where we get more minutes from. But yeah, this is what the Leafs have at their disposal. These regular season games are still ultimately, I don't want to say tryouts, but yeah, practices, scrimmages, regardless of how important it is for them to finish up the track in the standings. I'm kind of curious to see this, these minutes. It's an uncomfortable way to get there, but it does make these games a little bit more interesting to me. And my hope is, anyways, that if Muzzin does miss some time, that that's good for his legs in the long run.
You know, I was thinking about that as well. We talked about it earlier, how we want to see that. Well, here's the opportunity. And the Rangers are a good team. Like, they're not playing some pushover Canadians or Arizona Coyotes tonight. So it is a big opportunity to step in and to see. Like, I think the Rangers are second in the Metropolitan. Yeah, and they have more points than the Leafs. So there's, like, definitely a big matchup tonight. It's at MSG. It's one of those huge moment kind of games. So I do want to see more about what these players are like when they're put in a position, especially with the discussion about the trade deadline approaching, Sandin being one of those key pieces that you want to hold on to. I think if we're looking for a positive, that's certainly it. We're going to have a lot to discuss tomorrow in terms of how they looked and how they fared in a way bigger role.
It's never like, these are always the things you try to find silver linings. It's like, clearly, it's never good to have a guy get injured or a guy get a concussion. But yeah, like I was joking, but we have been asking to see what Sandin looks like in a bigger role and stuff. So, I mean, there's always a growth opportunity there with these things. Much more curious how that third pair bumping up into the second pair looks than how Alex Biega looks. We know the answer on that one. But yeah, it's suddenly a very big game for Sandin in particular. So yeah, I mean, that's a thing to watch, right?
That's the one for me is, again, Liljegren to me is someone who's taken a big step this year, but he's not Sandin. And the fact that they're on a pairing together, one guy is not like the other just because they're both first-round picks, right? And sometimes, to me anyways, I've seen people make the equivalency between the two of them or that it's closer between the two of them. I don't think that's the case. With Sandin, that's the story here, Blake. You nailed it. Is getting to see what this guy looks like in non-sheltered minutes where they're asking him to play those roles. And he's done it before, right? We mentioned that Vegas game where he was brilliant in that Vegas game. he's done this, but maybe he has to do it for a stretch of 3, 4, or 5 games in a row where the coach doesn't have the option of all of a sudden just putting him back down into that 12-13 minute range where he kind of has to eat those strong minutes. That's going to be a fascinating thing for this team in terms of data they use now, or but also data they use in an off season. It's a lot. Also, there's risk of injury to Jake Muzzin come playoff time. He's been hurt the last two playoffs, or however you want to spin the playoff before. So getting a look at what the most likely replacement for him does in that spot isn't the worst of things. Let's take a break. Let's do the A-list. J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram and subscribe/follow this podcast. It really does help us. Leave 5 stars. A-list, next. Going with this, Ailish.
It's just a little bit of angst this morning. Yeah. If you're listening on the podcast, you're missing out, but that's...
Missing out on some 3 days grace. Yeah,
I hate everything about you. 3 days grace. Fitting for some of the conversations surrounding hockey players and media and tension and me and JD and the
whiny
A-list.
Kid song. Yeah. What a whiny kid song, though. And I will say, that song actually does bang, right? Like, that song bangs. That song is a banger, but the lyrics themselves are so cringe. Like, the cringiest.
It's so stupid.
That's the cringiest lyric. That's so, so cringy.
Have you seen when people like do dramatic readings of just like song lyrics and they try to make it like poetic? That would be
hilarious. I feel like that's literally Blake's day to day. I feel like that's, if we had a camera set up of Blake's place, that would be like 30% of the content we'd be getting back.
That's good.
I mean, I did have a podcast that was just that for a couple years. So.
True.
You generated that at home content into something you could sell.
Actually, do you know that song's about his relationship with drugs and not a woman?
Exactly.
Okay, Vic, let's play it.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong,
bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Let's step back into the world of angry hockey players. Yes. A place I know very well. You know this guy for his rat-like skills and the way that he likes to poke buttons.
Yeah.
Think of who it is. Yes, it's Brad Marchand. One of the NHL's most notable bullies, instigators. Yeah. He's a good player, though. So yesterday, during one of the press conferences, Trocheck, was asked by a journalist, this is Vincent Trocheck, if his game and Brad Marchand's game was similar. His response... Are you calling me a rat? Okay, so he just says that. Marchand gets wind of this, and he makes an entire Instagram post on his actual Instagram with the quote graphic, are you calling me a rat? Vincent Trocheck on his game. And then it's one of those scroll Instagrams. You go to the next slide, and it's a screenshot of Brad Marchand's NHL totals, his points, his entire hockey DB.
Yeah.
From his Moncton Wildcats days to his Providence Bruins AHL days, and then his entire Boston Bruins career, where he's got 834 games played, 339 goals, etc. The next slide is Vincent Trocheck's screenshot of his hockey DB, all the way from when he played for the Saginaw Spirit, all the way down to his Hurricanes numbers, which are obviously not even close to Brad Marchand's. And then he also puts a screenshot of overall point producers in the league. I'm not sure if that one's over this year or over the last 10 years.
I think it's over the last 5 years.
Okay, it's not as clear. And it's obviously got Brad Marchand as fourth and no image of Vincent Trocheck. So he does this. He posts it on his Instagram and he puts in the caption... This is like comparing a Lambo to a Prius. Oh, my God. So he puts this on his Instagram, and then he deletes it after, I don't know, a short amount of time because he probably was told, hey, buddy, you got to take this down. Like, you're going to get in trouble. Yeah, I think he probably
took it down because that just is – he made his point. It's up there, and then – why have it on your personal Instagram feed, right? It's one
that's
of those.
True. Who knows why he posted it, or sorry, why he took it down, but it was definitely made its rounds online. Just an outrageous story. And they played last night, and the Bruins got absolutely steamrolled by the Hurricanes. So maybe he was a little distracted.
So, again, this is one of those I love it stories, right? I love it. I don't see any problem with this. Anybody who's upset, I truly believe, is being a child. It's so fun to have professional athletes. This guy's taking a shot. He's being funny. And then the other guy takes a shot back. To me, sports needs this. Sports is too much of a friendship club a lot of the times. Guys grow up together. They play in the high-level programs together. And I don't need them to hate one another. I don't need this to be, you know, Michael Jordan versus Isaiah Thomas. I recognize that those days have come and gone. But sometimes it's a little too pally for me. Sometimes it's a little bit too much Zach Hyman and Wayne Simmons talking about their families at the face-off circle for me. And I go, can you just not right now? Can you just do this during the summer, go play golf maybe? But not today. Today can you be enemies? The rat thing, if anything, this is what I learned. One, we definitely do underappreciate how great of a player Brad Marchand is. 100%. And I actually believe that Brad Marchand, in doing this, showed his hand a little that it bothers him as well. Mm-hmm. That he has never been afraid of the way people criticize him. He likes that he's a rat. He likes that he puts people off kilter when he plays. But also, to me, it would seem anyways, reading between the lines of his post, he doesn't want to be affiliated with Sean Avery, right? He doesn't want you to think, oh, right, I'm just some guy who's here. Not that Sean Avery was only in the NHL because he was an instigator, but that he's not just some rat. He's not your run-of-the-mill rat. He's a guy who not only licks your face, he puts the puck in the back of the net, right? Like, he's almost a point-of-game player throughout his career. He is amazing. And think about the reverence in which we speak about Patrice Bergeron, or the way we talk about David Pastrnak, who is his linemate. It's this perfection line. And it's not like one guy is amazing and he's a selke player, the other guy is the pure talent, and the other one is just the rat, right? Oh, he's just a rat. No, he's amazing. He's one of the best players on the planet. I got to tell you this, too. Out of all of it, Brad Marchand, what a year for him. Please don't play the Leafs in the playoffs in general,
no
because
way.
We know how that goes. But also because this is bad. This is really bad. I hate to admit this. This is totally the – what's the other family? Is the Capulets and the Montagues? That's it? I feel like I have forbidden love where I adore Brad Marchand. His, whether it was him talking about wanting to go to the Olympics, whether it's this post, whether it's the way that he just plays in general, I adore the man, and it hurts me to my core, right? Like, every time I get a snippet of Brad Marchand, I fall harder in love, and yet I'm from the Montagues, and they pull me away and go, no, your love is forbidden. And I go, ah.
And John Leguizamo's stepping to you and being like, I thumb my nose at you.
Yeah, he did thumb my nose at you, sir. Yeah, so yeah, that's that. Yeah, it's a tough spot for me personally. I think he's my favorite player in the NHL. I really do. That, I don't know what, I hate admitting that. I hate saying it out loud, but he's, to me, you are perfect.
Yeah, you've heard the term real recognize real before. This is rat recognize rat.
Yeah,
you,
I'm okay
you
with
and
it.
Brad Marchand just
I love
buds.
That
as long as I'm also putting up stats, just don't call me Vincent Trocheck. Like, that's
you're a point of game rat.
Yeah,
it's okay.
How'd you feel about Blake?
How did I feel about that? I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's like I was gonna say
your point was the only real thought on it I had, is that, like, yeah, you pulled the curtain back a little bit, that you care, and that's cool. I think that's great. And, like, he's not wrong. Like, the first half of his career, he was maybe a little bit more of an irritant, but over the last six seasons, he's like well over a point a game. Like, he's also really good. And I feel a little bad. Like, obviously we talked about the guys we're going to miss most or lost the most by not being in the Olympics. Like, that's his time to get to be a baby face for like a couple weeks, right? Because that would be the couple weeks where every Canadian sports fan loves Brad Marchand.
Do you guys think he's a top 10 player in the NHL?
Oh, that's tough. He has been clearly in the last 10 years with his or 5 years in his Instagram posts. I do. And I think there's a lot to be said about how we view him. And I think it was earlier on in our tenure, the Fan Morning Show, we talked about the most underrated players. And I threw him in there because of his I remember saying that and being like, you know what? He deserves a lot of credit, especially what he's done on the Canadian stage. But I think the problem is we like despise him because of how he is as a player against the Toronto Maple Leafs, but he deserves so much more credit. And I think that even just thinking about that point I made a couple months ago, look what he's done this season. And I just think because it's the Bruins, we don't like to give him hype, but he is definitely one of the best players in the league.
This is also one of JD's weird takes, but I've thought this for a while. He's also cursed by where he's from. He's from Nova Scotia, and there's two other guys that they're the Nova Scotia, right? Like, it's this tiny little place that made Sid, and it made McKinnon, and there's Marchand, who normally, from a place of that population, would be celebrated in ways where you would have the... you know how Nova Scotia loves to bring their flag whenever they go to a sporting event, if a person's from there? You would think that every Bruins game would have people with Nova Scotia flags, but to me, anyways, it doesn't seem as though that place claims him, right? Imagine he was from Newfoundland or New Brunswick instead. It would just be different, but he doesn't get to identify with being the Nova Scotia guy. He's number three, clearly, in that pecking order. Tough spot for him. Doesn't get the same love as that son.
Don't worry, he's getting some love this morning on the A-list. And speaking of, let's see if we can fit a couple others in here. Yeah, all in the hockey realm this morning. So Willie O'Ree's number was retired last night by the Boston Bruins. Obviously a New Brunswick hockey legend as well. So, well, close, East Coast. So yeah, his number 22 was retired by the Bruins last night. This is another thing that happened in the Bruins Hurricanes game yesterday. He was supposed to be retired last year, but because of COVID, they pushed it this year. It was just obviously a really incredible story. He broke hockey's color barrier back in 1958. He ended up playing 45 games for the Bruins over two seasons. He was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame in 2018. And he's obviously inspired the career of many players of all races, but specifically of Black players in the NHL and beyond. We had a lot of them sharing their stories of growing up and having representation. So a really wonderful story. He deserves all of the praise and to be, in the rafters at the Bruins arena forever. So that was last night. There's a lot of really wonderful videos if you want to go back and check it out on Twitter. Wonderful night. Not great for the Bruins on the scoreboard, but nonetheless, they had two kind of good stories out of that. Another hockey story that happened yesterday, just while we were actually on the air, we haven't got a chance to talk about it. I'm going to ask Jeff Merrick about it after the break. But the Premier Hockey Federation, which you might know as the NWHL, which recently rebranded, announced that they're doubling each team's salary cap to $750,000 and adding two expansion franchises next season. Especially kind of riding on the Winter Olympics movement, they announced that they had a $25 million investment over the next 3 years, which is one of the biggest, probably the biggest investment in women's hockey in quite a while. They had, I know Merrick had Ty Tuminia on, and she's the commissioner, so we can ask a little bit more about that. Obviously, it's a really important move. It's a huge move for women's hockey. They're hoping to establish a team in Montreal, which will be interesting. There's one in Toronto, which was the first year of it. So there's still a lot of puzzle pieces to be moved. A lot needs to actually be put into motion. And there has been rumors of things happening and then not happening in the past. So an exciting moment nonetheless. I'm very intrigued to see how long it takes to get these things underway, but a very positive story in the women's hockey world.
Yeah, it's hard for me to buy into this one when I know the way that the world's best players feel about that league. And it's always the undercut with this story is, I saw that the Toronto Six game was on TV the other day. They were beating the absolute tar off the Buffalo Buttes. Mm-hmm. And I had it on and it was just like in the background and I was kind of like walking around and like looking at it. And that's all I think of is your league is not going to get the star players. At what point... That's it to me. Is like, I don't really care how much money is in. I guess maybe I do because potentially that brings players to the negotiating table. But my understanding is that there are women that will never play in that league. That it is a staunch, like, Kyrie not getting the vaccine level.
There's certainly a lot of that tension from the past. But I think if you're looking at this, it could be something that helps change that narrative.
Because
a lot of these players are Canadian Montreal-based, which has been... a very interesting decision to now have a team there, because if you look at where the Olympians from Canada train, a lot of them are Montreal-based. So I think that that was part of their decision-making along this. But I agree with you. I mean, obviously, I got my foot in the door here with, yes, with how the players feel, and I know there's a lot of tension from the past. They're focused on the Olympics now. So it will be interesting to see how things shake out after. I know we have to go to break, but quick little side note is Kendall Coyne's book, another hockey story, As Fast as Her, is out as of today. It's about her following her dreams. Obviously, you know about what happened at the NHL All-Star Game where she came out. She, you know, pretty much beat everybody in terms of her fastest skater. She's wrote a book about her journey to break barriers and find success in the women's hockey world. So really great book to read. I'm sure I'm waiting for mine to come for anyone in your life that wants to be inspired, any little women's hockey players, anyone. So take a look at that. That is a book that's out now.